This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot going on here today. So, too, of course, is looking ahead to free agency, but also looking back to the Super Bowl. I mean, that feeling is still in the air, to say the least, and how we talked about the Super Bowl thing. All right, so two different pieces of audio. These are interesting. I'll put it that way. Howie was on with Todd McShay recently, and he lended perspective on winning the first title, which, of course, was 7 years ago, and then reacting to that championship as the Eagles were preparing for, at that time, the 2018, ramp up to the season. Listen to this story.
In 2017, we were on our way to Minnesota, and I said something to Joe. I said, what if we win this game? I said, you're not going to find me for a month. You know, I'm going to be on a bender. I'm going to be celebrating. It's going to be unbelievable. And that moment, I think, was a little different than this, and it was the first one, and had been part of teams that have lost four championship games and a Super Bowl. And, we won that really on the last play. I mean, Tom still got the ball in his hand, down 8, and the ball's in the air. I can't find it. You know, it looks like someone caught it but actually hit the ground. And then it's just like, it's almost partly relief, definitely joy, but it's almost like, man, you got one, right?
Right.
And so we come back from Minnesota Monday, Tuesday, it's like 9:30. I'm like, where's Joe? You know, I call him. I go, where are you, bro? And he goes, I'm having breakfast with my family. I'm like, get your ass in here. We're 6 weeks behind everyone. We're going to get our ass kicked. And he goes, hey. And I go, what's up? He goes, what happened to the month bender? What happened to like this all day? I said, we got to get another one.
All right, so that's Howie and Joe Douglas, a story of them, back then, and that's Howie right there with Todd McShay. Now, let's fast forward to more of his answer and more of his perspective, because, John,
that's a really important... That whole passage there, that's massively important.
All right,
love that he's saying this.
React to both here. Let me play the next piece of audio and then react to it all. Here is more perspective from Howie now that they have won a second. I would say brace yourself. You're going to hear how we talk that you've never heard him talk like this before. Here's more from Howie.
I think for me, the first, is this PG rated or PG-13?
Whatever you want.
So I'd say like the first one's almost like, can I say this? Bob? Yes, can we delete this? Is this live? You don't know what I'm saying?
You can be
it's,
you.
It's almost like the first time you have sex. You're so glad you had sex. It's not even the quality of it. The second
Perfect.
Time.
That's actually great.
The second time, it's like, wow, I could actually have fun and enjoy this. And so I would say, and Bob just had sex for his first time a couple weeks ago. So I think that, maybe he could talk about the first time again. But I think that this one, now the game was a little different, and we're fortunate about that. But I think this one, it was more fun. It was like less of a relief, less of like just like, all right, I got one, like I can check that box off, and more like, let's enjoy it, let's have fun, understanding a little bit better how to celebrate it.
Now it makes sense why Jalix Hunt said,
"What's up, Big Pimpin?"
All right. So, John, we got
poor Bob Lang catching some shrapnel there.
Right. So, funny stuff by Howie.
It is.
Howie's feeling really good.
A lot in there. All right, John.
And he should.
Your reaction to all that, 2017, 2018, 2024, 2025. Sex talk, Super Bowl talk,
get your ass in the office talk.
What do you make of it all?
Hyper aware of the past and of where that will lead in the future. I love that he's feeling so good. He can joke about all this stuff, but he's serious. And back, look, even though he was buckling down and he didn't do the bender thing back in 2017, they failed.
They did.
At bouncing back, at challenging after winning a Super Bowl.
Carson really did hurt them, though. He really did not play well, and they ultimately had to remove him in the lineup for a desperation chance to make the playoffs with Nick Foles when they had less than a 1% chance and rattled off 3 straight wins to get there. I mean, Carson, so I am struck, John, by how much of it was how he screwed it up in 2018 and how much of it was, you know, Carson messed it up. And also, Doug, I thought the offense became very stale. I think things that worked in 17 weren't working as well. Remember, they lost Reich and DeFilippo.
How much did Alshon play that year? Did he play at all?
He came back.
Was he injured?
I think
his shoulder was certain.
Well, he definitely had the drop, so he was back in 18.
He came back. Yeah. I thought in like the fourth game.
No. What it was, remember they put him on the short-term IR thing. It was the argument that you guys argued about.
I know that.
Yeah, so he missed like 7 games or something like that. It was like way longer than the 4 games.
They also had a ton of injuries. If you remember, they had no running backs. The whole room got wiped out.
Yep.
Corey Clement got hurt. Sproles, who they brought back, got hurt. Ajayi got hurt. Josh Adams led them in rushing. Josh Adams.
Exactly.
So they had a ton of injuries, which is also part of the reason. Wasn't that the year they threw the ball to Zach Ertz like 7,000 times? Wasn't that the year he had 116
catches or something like that. Yeah.
Look, we'll see, John. We'll see how he attacks it. It is good that he has the experience of what happened before. That is good.
He understands what he needs to prevent from happening. He's seen it fail, and so that gives him, I guess, more ammunition to do it the right way this time. It's still a massive challenge. It's still something that teams don't seem to have a hard and fast way to really know how to master this. And the root of that is you got guys who lose focus. You've just gone and achieved the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And then you say to those guys, hey, go get away from football. Go rest your joints and get away from this. And when they really do, and they go away for a month and a half, man, they're now a month and a half behind everybody else because they've been started. And they're trying to go win what you just won.
Here's something I'm struck by, Ruben. So, and I mean this is no offense to you at all. I poke at you sometimes, but it's always just joking. I so appreciated what you did for 09 and 10 and 11. You guys cranked it up to go for it again, and you were a big part of bringing in this guy and that guy and that guy. Okay. But I can tell you, I was more confident after 08 in your group winning a second than I was in 2017 in that group winning a second, or this group winning a second. And maybe more people right now will say this group, but they're about to lose a lot of good players. You were in an uncapped world. Well, you got to keep Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Cole Hamels and Brad Lidge and Jimmy Rollins, you know, and you didn't win another. It's tough.
It is really. Listen, it's tough to win the first
one. And your guys were young.
It's tough to win the first one. It's way tougher to win the second one.
Why?
Because there's so many different factors. People are scouted differently. People have a different mentality of, you know, there is still that hunger for most players, but it's just different. You are a target. You know, people are gunning for you every single day. It's a totally different atmosphere, and that's why you have to change things up. And I think we did that pretty well in 9, 10, and 11 is to change some things up. I mean, obviously the core was very similar.
Sure.
And that was important because those were winners. Those guys were winners. And you just had to try to bring in as many winning-type players as you possibly can, or people who are hungry enough or dedicated enough. And it's just it's really tough to repeat, man. It's so tough to win.
I know.
Number one. I can't emphasize that enough. And the way that the Eagles won and the fact that they have the kind of front office and the ownership group that they have, I have a lot of confidence that they can do it again and can be a, you know, a franchise that we will revere for a long, long time. But it's hard, man.
It is.
Injury, all types of stuff. I mean, we're in baseball, 162 games, and in football, what is it, 18, you know, weeks? And right. I mean, my goodness.
Plus, Ruben, I got to tell you, I think losing Darius Slay is a big loss. I know John thinks they're going to get him back, and they may, but he was really good, and he's gone. As of now, he's gone.
There may be bigger losses, though.
Oh, there may be bigger losses. There will be bigger losses.
There will be, and we will make do, and we will have to bring those young players up and give them a chance and hope that they can do things. You know, last year, Isaiah Rogers stepped in for Darius Slay and did a really good job on the outside.
But you don't even have him right now. He's also a free agent.
I think he's going to be back. Here's the thing. I think the Eagles have created also a culture, much like we did back then in Philly, where people wanted to come play here.
Yeah.
And you can say anything you want about Sirianni, but people love to play for the man.
Look, that can get you a little cheaper, but not much cheaper.
Not cheaper. Well, I'm just saying, you have a much better chance of getting the best players because the best want to come here.
You know who I think has the best chance to get the best players, honestly, Ruben?
The dollar does.
The team with the most cap space.
The dollar does. No, there's no question. I mean, it's almost 99.9% of the time. That said, if it's, you know, if you're apples and apples, they're coming to Philly.
All right, let's go to the phones. Your reaction to all of this, there's a lot going on here today. Darius Slay gone, at least for now, perhaps for all time. Your reaction, what it means for the Eagles. And, you know, as I said earlier, my main reaction, and I wrote down four words before the show, and those four words were, and so it begins. Meaning the losing of good players that have been really good, that we love, that helped create a Super Bowl winning team, that without them, I think the Eagles will be a lesser team. Doesn't mean they can't win it all again, but I don't think they'll be to the same standard. I mean, guys, that was an all-time team the other day that won that Super Bowl. And very few teams repeat. That's a fact in pro football. Ron in Souderton. Ron, good morning.
Morning show. First time, long time.
Awesome. Thanks for calling, Ron.
I just want to say the Phillies lineup, it doesn't really matter what order we're going to put them in. If no one has any discipline, we're going to end up in the same place as last year.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I agree as well.
They have to have a little bit of a different mindset. There's no question about it.
And like, don't you think they will, Ron?
The only one
based on what?
Yeah, John, it's been multiple years, man. I mean, I don't know.
I thought in the playoffs last year they would. They didn't.
Yeah, but I agree with your point, Ron. How they hit is more important than the order in which they hit. That is true.
It also comes down to Bryce, really, because everyone's going to follow his lead. If he has discipline, the rest of the team will, too.
Bryce catching some shrapnel around here today. A lot of people not happy with Bryce. All right. I mean,
I think it's a little unwarranted.
I do, too, Ruben.
He's a phenomenal offensive player. There's no question. Played pretty darn well at first base.
Is he allowed to not run his hardest, Ruben, to protect his hamstrings? Is that considered acceptable? And here's question two, Ruben. If he does, are other players allowed to not run as hard to protect their hamstring, even if they're younger?
So we're setting a standard when we start thinking about running down the line because Chase Utley was the guy. He ran hard every single time.
Yep.
He believed in that. There is a school of thought that, hey, if you just run three quarters and you run aggressively enough just to save yourself, maybe that's the best thing. I fall on the sword of busting it because you're playing for 3 hours and busting it as much as you can.
Right.
I understand the other thought process, but I think everybody takes sort of the lead from the guys who lead, the guys who are playing every day, and I think that base running is an important part of it.
Yeah, that bothered me last year, Ron. I got to tell you, I get it because Bryce has had those injuries and he's, you know, getting older, but that part I did not like.
You can't start that kind of mindset because it just dribbles into the rest of the clubhouse.
It certainly can, unless it is told, and I mean this, just told everybody, guys, there's an exception, you have to run your hardest. Exception of the rule, Bryce Harper. Just understand it. Now I'm not,
I don't believe in that. I do not believe that at all.
Work.
That doesn't work for me.
It might not work, but I'm just saying I'd rather, if they're going to have him not run his hardest, I'd rather they say that to the other 25 players than not say it. But I know that's funky. I get it. Ron, give me an answer, my man. An interesting celebrity.
Going to go with Dennis Rodman.
Wow. That is a good answer. We're looking for the most interesting celeb since 74 when People magazine began. Dennis Rodman's a good answer.
Yeah.
Speaking
I haven't
of
it, seen him much lately.
No.
Not since the
North Korea thing.
The leader. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he solved world peace.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the worst guests we've ever had.
Why?
We had him at Wing Bowl.
Yep.
And he wouldn't talk.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it was, I've never seen anything like it.
Was he disinterested?
Correct.
Yeah. Just give me my money and then I'm out of here.
Correct. That's all he wanted.
Yeah,
it was
not good.
It was so bad.
That's not good.
It was really.
That's not good.
I've never seen Angela pivot to just not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that quickly.
All right. Tomorrow is going to be tough on moi.
Why?
Ruben, how hard is it going to be when the callers come after me about Jalen Hurts tomorrow? Jalen Hurts Day tomorrow here on the show.
Welcome to the family, pal. It happens.
I might get kicked off the island tomorrow.
Deal with it.
I will have to deal with it. All right. Good morning to you. On a Tuesday morning, we'll be down to Philly Spring Training Thursday and Friday this week. Looking forward to seeing the Phils, doing some interviews down there, doing the show.
You guys.
Yeah, Rube. No.
Dang it. Thanks a lot, Rube, for not coming when we're going.
What the hell, man? So you're there.
Not cool.
I don't make my schedule.
The next couple weeks, though, you're there quite a bit, right, Ruben?
Indeed. I think like from the 12th on, yeah.
Good deal. By the way, afternoon show's down there now. So they will be doing their program today and Wednesday from Philly Spring Training, which will involve, I don't know the guest list they'll have, but certainly some notable interviews will be on the show. So check out the afternoon show today from 2 to 6. Our program Thursday and Friday with some interviews should be fun. All right. We had a retirement yesterday in sports. It is a non-athlete, although he was an athlete many, many, many years ago when he played with the person that he played for, coached for, and fired him. All right. Wow. I'm not going to tell you the name. You'll recognize the voice, but I've given you a pretty big hint. A retirement yesterday from this guy.
I've made an extremely difficult decision. I've been thinking about it for the last 4 or 5 years. And I've decided to retire from Fox, and I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss all the guys, and I'll see them occasionally. But it has been a great run starting back 31 years ago.
John, that is Jimmy Johnson.
Yes, indeed.
Will no longer be on our Fox NFL Sundays. 81 years old.
Yeah, how about that?
For Jimmy Johnson, and he hangs it up. And he said it was the most fun he ever had, and I'm thinking, well, of course it was. You didn't have any stress.
No stress.
He didn't have the coaching stress.
Look at me now.
Look, Ruben, I think you're aging backwards.
No stress, right, bro.
You've gone from grays to non-grays.
He looks
phenomenal. Does look amazing.
I mean, phenomenal. Either he's had great work or he just has great genes and a great mental outlook. But my goodness.
He was the one guy.
Vibrant still.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like he's very with it. He's so energetic. And you know, I can, I hope I'm that with it, and man, he looks like he can go for a jog.
Yeah.
I bet he can beat you in a race.
I would say maybe.
Yeah?
Maybe.
Maybe definitely.
Maybe definitely. So, he did a damn good job. He was really good at it, and obviously he had walked the walk as a coach. I mean, one of the few people to win championships, both college and pro. So he really, you know, I mean,
he's one of those guys that got the respect and got the results.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Hall of Famer, man.
Yeah, made it a
Hall of Famer.
Couple years back. Jimmy Johnson.
Pretty awesome.
All right, so Jimmy Johnson retires. 215-592-9494. Darius Slay gone. We'll talk to Elliot in about 5 minutes. The implications of no Darius Slay moving forward, unless they come to terms on a deal, which is possible, but I would tell you is unlikely. I mean, they've had the chance to come to terms on a deal in the last few weeks and didn't, so I don't think it's likely it'll be different, but we'll see. All right, also, do you trust Trey Turner? He could be the leadoff hole hitter. Even if he's not, he's going to bat somewhere in a prominent spot, you know, one or two. Ruben, you seem to be a much... Just walk me through your mindset here right before we go back to the phones. You believe in Trey more than most. Why?
He's a great offensive player.
Was or is?
Is. He's really good.
John, was or is?
He's really, really, really good.
John, isn't it more was?
Oh, come on.
Was.
Oh, God bless. Look at the numbers.
Well, his
numbers have been good, not great.
I mean,
they haven't been great.
338 on base percentage isn't even good. It's okay. It's okay.
It's pretty good in this day and age. Sadly,
look,
that's
played
a pretty good number.
He played three quarters of the games last year, and he walked 27 times. That is lame.
Dude, his
he had a 375 OBP in 2021, 385 the year before, or sorry, 394 the year before. I mean, that's the Trey Turner we were hoping for.
I don't understand.
You'll get him again.
I don't understand the inconsistency, though, Ruben. The inconsistency in approach. And maybe it's just because I was never a baseball player myself. I don't understand the mindset. I thought approach was about a consistent mindset when you're at the plate. And it seems like our approach for a lot of the big name guys is anything but consistent.
I think it's a little bit of expectation and a little bit of a different vibe. I mean, he's played in different cities and had different levels of success. There's an expectation when you sign a $300 million deal that you have to do things better, or you have to, you know, perform better. And some guys handle it well, and some guys it takes a little time.
Price's worst stretch here was the first half of his first year.
Look at Lindor.
Remember that?
When he came over and signed his deal with the Mets. It took him some time, but last year was his first year where he got closer to that MVP-type status. Mm-hmm. It takes some time sometimes. I would just have a lot more confidence in the guy just because I know that he has a level of ability that is beyond most. And yes, he does have to make some adjustments, and he does have to get a little bit better with his decision-making. That said, I still believe in the guy.
Is he? How about his defense? Do you believe in his defense as a shortstop?
I mean, I don't have the same confidence in his defense as I do in his offense. There's no question about that.
Yeah, nobody does. I mean, how can you?
I think that at some point he may end up being further away from the baseball into the outfield, but I'm not sure when that's going
to
happen.
Okay, let's go to the phones. 215-592-9494. Elliot in about 5 minutes. Greg right now. Greg, good morning.
Guys, how you doing this morning? Great show. Great topics, by the way.
Thanks, Greg.
Ruben, good to talk to you for the first time. An old friend of yours, I know, down here in Atlanta.
Thanks,
always
man.
Says some good things about you, I guess from Penn Charter or something.
Nice.
John Zaccaro, if you remember that guy.
Okay.
Question about free agency and even, you know, when you're picking up free agency, whether it's NFL or MLB, Ruben, you could probably address this a little bit. When you're looking at a champion and you're looking at a couple players of need, how much does I'm taking from my team?
Can you say that again, Greg? We lost you. How much does what?
How much does choosing a player, you know, you have two players, and choosing a player from, let's say, the Eagles versus maybe Dallas, if you're the Redskins or the Lions, come into play in making the decision on player to pick? Or if it does at all?
Well, a Cowboy, you got to make him get a hard shower before he even steps into Philadelphia. So.
I think it does make a difference where you're playing, where you've played, and how you've performed, and what culture you've played in. I think all of it matters. I think getting information about how that makeup, who that person is, and, you know, how he'll handle being in Philadelphia with that expectation, that matters a lot to me.
How much does it matter weakening your toughest rival matter?
Not at all for me. I mean, that's a great bonus. But for me, it's about how good you make your team. It's about, I think, I get very singular when it comes to that. For me, it's about making your team the best team you could possibly be, and then let the chips fall where they may.
Well, hold on. I got to ask, Rhea, didn't the Eagles swing the balance of power when they signed Chris Bonial from the Cowboys?
Oh, don't even
I thought
up.
That changed everything.
We got into a fight once, Chris
that,
Bonial.
That guy.
Verbal
that
disagreement.
That guy. Him and Darren Smith. Yeah. Oh!
Is it getting harder or easier to play in Philadelphia? Do you think as for the last 3 years, a lot of stigma attached to our team, but you know they've won some great baseball games also.
Easier. I think it's gotten a little easier because I think the fans are a little more supportive than they have been in the past. But
isn't that from crossover support from the Eagles being so good? Don't you think some of that is like the Eagles have garnered the goodwill,
yes,
and it's just a byproduct that the Phillies are catching that goodwill? They're lucky that it's easier right now to be a Philly. I think
the Flyers are lucky that the Sixers tanked and showed people you can not be good and not get as criticized as you should. Flyers haven't been good in 50 freaking years, it feels like.
10 or 12 years ago, you would never have happened to Alec Bohm or Trey Turner.
Oh, absolutely not.
Would never have happened.
No. I agree.
And I think that's important. I think it's a good thing.
I agree. All right, Greg, give me an answer, my man. An interesting celebrity in this People magazine era of 51 years.
This person's touched everything from sports to celebrity to politics to social issues. Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner.
You got it, my man. Greg, appreciate the phone call. And, you know, the Flyer point I made there. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, that is an interesting answer. And I was joking when I said 50 years for the Flyers. It's been 50 years since they won. James, 15 years. 2010. They got to the Stanley Cup in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
They've won two series since then.
Oh, God.
Two series. Two series. They won one series in 2012, and they won one series.
2010?
And they won one series in 2020. I don't think I'm missing one, right, Ray?
No. That's pretty that's almost as bad as the Phillies were from like 2011 to.
Yeah. Guys,
like
when I was growing up, the Flyers for a stretch there, they were in the finals
all the time.
One out of every 5 years, they were in the finals. They were in the finals in 74, 5, 76, 80, 85, 87. 97, 2010. They were in the finals, I think, like seven times in 35 years, something like that. And now they've won two series in 15 years.
They were the most popular team, I think. I mean, listen, they sold out every single night at the Spectrum and at the, you know.
You ready for this, Ruben? Jeffrey Lurie is Ed Snyder. Those two were on the same level as far as ownership in Philadelphia sports history.
I agree with that. It
starts
Dave
at
Montgomery
the top
in there too.
Yeah, I put him a great person. I put him a little below on the consistent standard of excellence, not as a person, as far as a team. But Montgomery was a well above average owner. There's no question, and I got a lot of love for him. All right, let's talk to Elliot Shore Parks. Of course, he joins us every single Tuesday. There's an awful lot going on, primarily today discussing, you know, the absence of Darius Slay moving forward, unless they keep him. But I tend to think he's gone. Elliot is brought to us by Colonial Hyundai. Shop online 24/7 at ColonialHyundai.com. Colonial Hyundai, the fast, easier, better way to buy a Hyundai. Elliot, my reaction when Slay news came out yesterday was, and so it begins. The loss of really good players that we loved and helped win a Super Bowl. I tend to think that holds and he won't be kept, even though they can still negotiate with him. Elliot, good morning, buddy.
What up? How you guys doing?
A lot, man. So what's your reaction, Elliot? Darius Slay has been told you're no longer an Eagle.
Yeah.
What's your reaction?
My initial reaction was probably different than others, just because I think what they're losing more is like a locker room guy than on the field. And he was very good on the field last year, I think better than people expected. Maybe very good as strong. But he certainly had a good year with the team, and replacing him won't be easy. But I equate this, and just in a locker room sense, not from a fan sense, but from a locker room sense of losing like a Fletcher Cox, Jason Kelce, Brandon Graham. Like, he was that influential and popular in the locker room. Like, he was one of, if not the most vocal players in there. All the teammates loved him. And just from a pure like helping guys around him perspective, I don't know if I've covered an Eagle that does more of that. Like, they have a lot of good guys in that way, but so many times after a training camp practice, I would be out on the field, and you can just see Darius Slay working with a young corner or a young receiver, like for, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes after practice. So we'll talk about on the field, but off the field, I think this is a very big loss if he does leave.
Well, what is the – how likely is it that he's brought back? The possibility, if it exists, how likely is it?
The way I would phrase it is, I think because the Eagles love Slay and Slay loves the Eagles, you can't rule it out. I just don't think it makes sense this time. Like last year when they brought him back, I thought it made sense. They had just drafted or they were planning on trying to draft young corners, and having him around to help them made sense because of, again, what I talked about with the off-the-field stuff. But I think this time around, if I'm Slay, I just won a Super Bowl, And, you know, he's been pretty vocal that he has one more year he wants to play. I mean, are they going to promise him a starting job? Like, if he comes back, is he going to have to compete? Are they going to say, you'll just definitely start? Because I think in base next year, when there's only two corners on the field, they're going to want it to be Cooper and Quinion. So that's a reduced role already. And then from the Eagles' perspective, this would be somewhat the perfect time to turn the page to either Akili Ringo or if you re-sign Isaiah Rodgers. So I just – look, anything could happen. They both like each other, so it's possible. But it just doesn't seem to make sense for me, at least, like on the field.
So – you bring up those names, Keely Ringo, Isaiah Rodgers. Isaiah Rodgers is on a one-year, $1 million deal this past season. What would you expect he will be fetching this year? And Keely Ringo, how ready is he to play cornerback in the NFL? He's only been special teams. How far away is he from being able to do what someone like Isaiah Rodgers does?
So I guess to start with Keely, when I talked to Christian Parker, their defensive backs coach at the Super Bowl, I asked him, like, what player are fans not talking enough about that you've been impressed with this year? And the first name that came out of his mouth was Keely Ringo.
Wow.
So I do think internally they do like him. I'd also add that the Eagles often bring up, like, when a guy has an awesome year on special teams as a young player, it's kind of a sign that maybe they're ready to contribute on defense more. They saw that with N'Kobe, Nolan Smith had a good year on special teams, and Keely had a really good year on special teams. So I do think internally they're into the idea of Keely. Now, you bring up Isaiah Rodgers. Like, Isaiah Rodgers beat Keely out last year for snaps. If you remember, whenever Darius Slay came off the field towards the end of the season, it was Isaiah Rodgers that went out there.
Yes.
His contract is tough to predict just because I think they would want different things. The Eagles would want Rodgers on a multi-year deal because if he comes in here and wins the job, they're going to want him under contract. And Rodgers probably wants a shorter contract because if he comes in here and wins the job, he can then cash in. So the number I would think would be maybe like $5 million a year average, but it's tough to guess because he could be anywhere from starting corner money to backup money. But I think they'll try to re-sign him.
And James Bradbury is still doing...
No, he's not going to be, yeah.
he's technically on our team right now.
They don't carry him again, though, right, Elliot?
Potentially.
No, he'll be gone.
Okay. Okay, and he's gone even though... Are we paying him this year, Elliot?
So they'll likely be a dead cap hit, but I mean, like, Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox had almost $30 million in dead cap hits last year.
It's just the cost of business.
Yeah, it just is. So they should have, after cutting Darius Slay, around $26 million in cap space. The Bradbury thing won't cost them any more space to move on from him.
Elliot, let's talk about some other aspects of this free agency thing. You know, we have spent a grand total of 0 minutes, zero, talking about other teams' players that could become Eagles.
Yeah.
Are there anybody that comes to mind for you that we should be aware of?
Miles Garrett,
but he's not a free agent. Are there anybody that come to mind that you think could slide in here on whatever level of deals?
Yeah, so I think two positions I would definitely look at from a free agent perspective would be edge and defensive tackle, just because they're set to lose guys at that position, assuming Milton Williams and Joshua don't come back. I do think they could draft players there. But you also probably don't want to go into the year with Nolan Smith, Jalix Hunt, and a rookie as your top three guys. So a few names I would keep an eye on from edge perspective. One would be Azeez Ojulari from the Giants. He's still very young. He's only 24 years old. He has 22 sacks in 46 games, but he has had health issues. So I think that, you know, he kind of checked a few boxes. One, he has production. He's young. The Eagles like to target young players in free agency, especially if they're going to give them any type of substantial money. And he has a proven track record where you feel like his best football could still be ahead of him. So I would keep an eye out on Ojulari. And then from a defensive tackle perspective, they could go older there. I could picture them signing a vet just because they are young and you would like a veteran experience there. So Jerron Reed out of Seattle, he's played in winning organizations. He had almost as many pressures as Milton Williams did last year. And so he's a name that I would keep an eye on. But I definitely think edge and defensive tackle are two positions they'll be after.
All right, so let's talk more about Edge. Brandon Graham, Elliot, two questions. Question one, do the Eagles want Brandon Graham back if he wants to play? Question two, does wanting him back depend on whether they retain Josh Sweat and Milton Williams? Put another way, does Brandon Graham not know right now what's going to happen with him next week?
So to the second question, I don't think what happens with them impacts Brandon. So you look at the Edge position, again, you have Jalix Hunt, Nolan Smith. I do think there's a pretty good chance, just, you know, you never know how the draft will play out, but it's viewed as a very strong Edge class. So, you know, maybe a rookie is slotted into one of those like four or five spots, however you want to look at it. So there's maybe one or two spots left. The sense I got during the year was that they wanted Brandon Graham back. Like, I'm not as sure about that anymore. And I don't know if Brandon has an answer yet on like what he's going to do. I do think the injury probably impacted things, and then obviously winning the Super Bowl. So if you had to ask me right now, I would bet Brandon like retires and does not play next year.
Yeah, it's kind of my instincts also, man. But he was good.
I think it was the opposite side of that coin, though, for a stretch in the middle of the season.
I did,
it
too.
Felt like because he was playing at such a high level, and it felt like they wanted him back. I don't know what it was that changed that. Do you have any idea what might have changed
The injury.
I think the injury, but also Nolan Smith and Jalix Hunt really played well at the end of the year. And so then you go from middle of the year being like, well, who knows what Jalix Hunt is. Nolan Smith hadn't really taken off yet.
Right.
Brandon's playing awesome. Maybe it makes sense to bring him back. But now if you expect those two to get big-time snaps, plus like adding on a rookie and maybe another vet, like slowly those snaps start to go away. So that could have been part of it. So
I think that's what it is, the precociousness. And then what about Myles Garrett? Myles Garrett, we haven't talked about him much today.
We haven't.
But major opportunity here in my book, Elliot. What's the likelihood you think that he's an Eagle eventually?
So leaving Indianapolis last week, the best way like I would phrase where I view the Myles Garrett thing is, I think when Andrew Berry decides to trade Myles Garrett, the first call he'll make is to Howie Roseman. Like, they have a good relationship. There's interest there from the Eagles. And then once that call's made, like, you know, maybe he asked for too much. Maybe the contract doesn't work out. But I think the Eagles will have a chance to acquire Myles Garrett this offseason if they want to. I feel confident the Browns will trade him. It's just going to come down to whether or not, you know, they feel like if it's two ones plus $100 million guaranteed. Like, I don't know. Howie said flat out at the combine, they're probably not in a position right now to trade a high level pick and hand out a high level contract. And another thing Howie said that has stuck with me is it was, you know, he basically was like, you probably won't see too many new jerseys at the link next year. And I think his way of saying that was like, you're probably not going to see a big, big impact guy where you're adding like a Saquon or, you know, something like that. So who knows? But I just think Andrew Berry will call Howie and be like, hey, we're going to trade him. Like, what's your interest? And then Howie will have to decide.
Yeah, and with the 32nd pick, that's hard. All right, Elliot, let's talk about the two Kennys.
I don't think it's hard.
John, I don't know how with the 32nd pick you think that puts the Eagles in the driver's position to get.
He wants to be here, and I'm saying we offer
them. You don't know that. You don't know that.
Well, he wants to be somewhere where he can win a Super Bowl. I believe that we're a great option in that
Eagles
regard.
Are an option. I mean, so could be the Rams. So could be Detroit.
Absolutely.
So could be Buffalo. So could be Kansas City.
I know that at the Combine, everyone was abuzz about the fact that Howie Roseman really was on this. Howie Roseman really was focused on figuring out a way to get Myles Garrett here.
The other thing, too, I would add, because I heard you talking about Lurie and owners before I got on, is I do think if the Eagles decide they want him, and let's say there's four teams that are willing to pay Myles Garrett, I'd be surprised if there's a team willing to cut a bigger signing bonus check than Jeffrey Lurie. Like, that is one advantage they will have contractually if it comes down to negotiating with Myles Garrett.
Good.
Beautiful.
Love that. All right. Final thing, Elliot. The two Kennys, Kenny G and Kenny P, Gainwell and Pickett. Do they give Kenny G the extra, like, $2 million to keep him? And they got to get rid of Pickett, right? I mean, with all these starters you got to try to keep, you can't have an expensive backup when you got Tanner McKee ready to slide to two. Pickett's got to be gone, right?
Well, so Pickett is not a free agent. So
I mean, you got to trade him.
Yeah. So I think they'll try for sure. I mean, it depends what the offer is. Like, if nobody wants him, would they just cut him? Probably not, because he's not super. I think his base is pretty low this upcoming season. So I don't think he costs a ton of money. It would just be a matter of what they could get for him, and that's tough. I mean, he played well in the two games he played last season, but you're probably not getting much more than a sixth. And at that point, would you rather just keep him? And then as far as Kenny Gainwell, I think they're ready to make Will Shipley the top backup next year. So if Kenny Gainwell hits the market and doesn't find a contract he likes or a better opportunity, maybe Kenny Gainwell will come back. But I don't think it'll be give him an extra $2 million to keep him. I think it'll be Kenny calls the Eagles and go, hey, this is not how I expected free agency to go. And then maybe they bring him back. But I think Gainwell's probably gone.
Sirianni's going to give him a big hug because I think Sirianni loves him.
He loves him. He does love him.
He does. I agree. But
aren't you concerned about Shipley not being able to pass block as well as Kenny does?
That's definitely part of it. And that's why Gainwell plays a lot.
Yeah.
I'm worried about it.
That's right.
For sure. Shipley's had a full year of coaching. Jamal Singleton, I think, is a good running back coach. So, I think they would only move on from Gainwell if they felt Shipley could do that. But I think as a runner and a player, they think Shipley is just a better option.
All right. Last thing, Elliot. Hurts Day tomorrow on our show.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
How rough is this going to be on me, the audience coming after me? Or are people going to acknowledge that they did carry his ass until he stepped up at the end?
Well, I don't think that comment.
That's not going to help, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think you just got to admit, and here's what I would say with Hurts. People should be able to change their mind. If you were critical of him in week 7, 8, 9, I don't think that means you can't enjoy his success now. Now, you were
absolutely
a little over the top.
I was hard on him. I was.
Yeah.
Also haven't pointed out yet, but I will right now for the first time. They win the Super Bowl comfortably with Tanner McKee in that game. Who am I to say?
I think it's probably going to be a rough day for you.
Stop.
Who am I to say when the defense gives up
one
first down in the first half? You think they would have won that Super Bowl by 20 points?
No, they would have gone out there and said, oh, no, Tanner's our quarterback. Then said they were like, we got Jalen. We're going to win.
By the way, how many?
You underrate the leadership, what this guy means to the team.
How many touchdown drives did Jalen have in the first half? The answer is one. One drive. Yeah. He got the ball on the 12-yard line when he hit A.J. Brown.
I'm going to try to coach you through
Cooper
this
DeJean had
game.
A pick six. He had one touchdown drive in the first half. But no, Tanner McKee, who, by the way, won his one start 41-7.
Against backups.
There's no way the Eagles.
You're a fool.
All right, I'll stop.
I'm definitely setting my alarm for 5:45 tomorrow. I can tell you that. So.
No, you know what? I'm ready to give Jalen a lot of props, obviously. But I think there's a lot of truth to what I just said. Elliot, have a great day, buddy. We'll talk soon.
No, there is not. Right, no,
man.
There is not.
I shouldn't bring up the Tanner McKee thing.
It's nonsensical.
Yeah, 41-7 in his one game.
It's a silly thing to say.
Yeah. You know, that touchdown drive.
Hold on.
When he hit A.J. Brown.
How about the fact that you're just wrong? Wow. It was not 41-7 that game. That was the game that Kenny Pickett started and Tanner McKee finished off.
What was it?
21-7 or 21-14 or something like that.
I'm going to get my games confused.
Hammer! Shut his hole!
Hammer went 4 for 5 this week, apparently. Sorry. My fault.
That was beautiful.
You know what I'll do Friday?
Bang!
I'll be ready.
The hammer!
Always ready. But I make my mistakes sometimes. Listen, I did dog Jalen more than I should have. There's no doubt. I did underestimate him to an extent. I still don't think he's as good as some people do, as many people do, but he was better than I thought, and I will certainly acknowledge that tomorrow. We'll have some fun with the show tomorrow. Let's also get to our Twitter poll questions of the day today, brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. What's the Armin difference? It's simple. It's their people, well-trained, friendly, and caring. Together, let's drive. Visit ArminChevy.com. First poll question, will Darius Slay make the Eagles Hall of Fame, yes or no? Second poll question, of the four big free agents the Eagles have, Bon Becton, Milton Williams, and Josh Sweat, how many do you think they keep? You can vote on both of them at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. Let's get to Chuck right now in Cherry Hill. Good morning, Chuck.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. The criticism, apologize for my voice, of Harper today by Rick and Mike, I think, is really unwarranted. As a matter of fact, I think it borderlines outrageous.
I think so too. I agree.
Say, I'm worked up today. My wife said it's not good for your blood pressure back-to-back days, but it's as if we all just landed on Mars or something, because the numbers belie any criticism. First,
including
of all,
postseason Philly. Numbers.
Yeah, well, I want to get there in a second, yeah. But let's just go to the Philly, since we love them as a Philly. I'm going to round here just a little bigger, Your Honor. 290, 400, 533, 924 is a Philly. What? Any criticism of that? Last year they put him at first base. He's in the top five DRS defensively. Here he is in postseason for the Phillies. Check this out. I'll go slow. 325, last 3 years, 325, 444. Check this one out. Slug, 709. OPS is 1153. Yeah. Do you realize, Joe, he is in the top 10 all time? That's the club that's got Ruth Gargan Cobb in it.
Wow.
He is fifth in four categories, and his 1016 OPS is ninth all time.
Like, I think he's amazing. Chuck, let me say this one thing, because there's part of what those calls said that I do agree with, though.
Okay.
If he's not willing to do things that he should do to help the team, like bat in a certain spot or play a certain position, that would bother me. I mean, Aaron Judge, for what it's worth, despite being like the biggest human in baseball, still plays center field. Mm-hmm. All I hear about is center field is the hardest thing, and you can't put your body out there. You got to cover all this ground. Like, center field. Aaron Judge is like Eric Lindros in size, and he plays center field. And he hits 50-something homers. Like, that's freaking ridiculous. That's amazing.
I acknowledge that. To that end, can I ask Ruben a question that's kind of a yes or no answer?
Why not?
Thanks. It's always good talking to you, Ruben. Thank you very much. Do you think yes or no? And I know we have to conjecture here and lose our minds a little bit, but that's fun. Do you think the Phillies, yes or no, have gone to Harper and Turner months ago and said, will you guys consider left field and center? Because that is a huge consideration. Had they done that for Stott to go to short, maybe pick up a Walker for first, who knows? But do you think that conversation, that meeting, took place with those guys?
No.
Okay, thank you for that. All right, good, good, good. Somebody is qualified to answer that. I appreciate that very much. Joe, just let's appreciate this guy. I mean, the clutch home runs he hit against San Diego, Atlanta, this guy, postseason.
Yeah. Him and Wheeler, look, Schilling delivered in 93 in the postseason. Cliff Lee, obviously, in Cole in 08, Cliff in 09.
Yeah.
Like, there are some guys that you just feel like you can trust in a postseason moment. Harper and Wheeler, I mean, it's not their fault they haven't won a World Series. Those two guys have delivered so dramatically in both the regular season and the postseason.
And I have to say, Turner's 313, 375, 530 post, 906. So Turner stepped up postseason.
That's heavily weighed by that first Braves series,
it
now,
is.
If you remember.
Yeah.
He went wild on that one. All right, Chuck, I need an answer. An interesting celebrity.
I don't really have any. Jim Carrey, it's a bad answer, but anyway, it's an answer.
All right, it's an answer already said.
Good answer.
No, already said.
It's a weird noise he made.
Was.
Yeah. I mean, like a really weird noise. Belch-like.
He was...
Belch and growl.
He was contemplating.
Contemplating.
He was. Ruben, what was the hardest, speaking of contemplating, the hardest decision you had to make as GM?
Oh, Charlie Manuel.
Mm.
That was awful. That sucked. There was, that was, I mean, I, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I would never want to go back to that space again.
We could tell.
Awful.
Yeah, that.
You know what pissed me off was when people actually thought I was faking it.
Well, that's so ridiculous.
It's silliness.
I never heard someone say that, but you heard people say that?
It's insane.
That's not cool.
Terrible.
Yeah.